In 2000, Angie Bachman's parents, both longtime smokers, started showing signs of lung disease. She began flying to Tennessee to see them every other week, buying groceries and helping to cook dinner. When she came back home to her husband and daughters, the stretches seemed even lonelier now. Sometimes the house was empty all day long. It was as if, in her absence, her friends had forgotten to invite her to things, and her family had figured out how to get by on their own. Bachman was worried about her parents, upset that her husband seemed more interested in his work than her anxieties, and resentful of her kids, who didn't realize she needed them now, after all the sacrifices she had made while they were growing up. But whenever she hit the casino, those tensions would float away. She started going a couple times a week when she wasn't visiting her parents, and then every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. She still had rules, but she'd been gambling for years by now and knew the axioms that serious players lived by. She never put down less than $25 a hand and always played two hands at once. "You have better odds at a higher limit table than at a lower limit table," she told me. "You have to be able to play through the rough patches until your luck turns. I've seen people walk in with $150 and win $10,000. I knew I could do this if I followed my rules. I was in control." By then, she didn't have to think about whether to take another card or double her bet. She acted automatically, just as Eugene Pauly, the amnesiac, had eventually learned to always choose the right cardboard rectangle. One day in 2000, Bachman went home from the casino with $6,000, enough to pay rent for 2 months and wipe out the credit card bills that were piling up by the front door. Another time, she walked away with $2,000. Sometimes she lost, but that was part of the game. Smart gamblers knew you had to go down to go up. Eventually, Harrah's gave her a line of credit so she wouldn't have to carry so much cash. Other players sought her out and sat at her table because she knew what she was doing. At the buffet, the hosts would let her go to the front of the line. "I know how to play," she told me. "I know that sounds like somebody who's got a problem not recognizing their problem, but the only mistake I made was not quitting. There wasn't anything wrong with how I played." Bachman's rules gradually became more flexible as the size of her winnings and losses expanded. One day, she lost $800 in an hour and then earned $1,200 in 40 minutes. Then her luck turned again, and she walked away down $4,000. Another time, she lost $3,500 in the morning, earned $5,000 by 1 p.m., and lost another $3,000 in the afternoon. The casino had records of how much she owed and what she'd earned. She'd stopped keeping track herself. Then one month, she didn't have enough in her bank account for the electricity bill. She asked her parents for a small loan, and then another. She borrowed $2,000 one month, $2,500 the next. It wasn't a big deal. They had the money. Bachman had never had problems with drinking or drugs or overeating. She was a normal mom, with the same highs and lows as everyone else. So the compulsion she felt to gamble, the insistent pull that made her feel distracted or irritable on days when she didn't visit the casino, the way she found herself thinking about it all the time, the rush she felt on a good run, caught her completely off guard. It was a new sensation, so unexpected that she hardly knew it was a problem until it had taken hold of her life. In retrospect, it seemed like there had been no dividing line. One day it was fun, and the next it was uncontrollable. By 2001, she was going to the casino every day. She went whenever she fought with her husband or felt unappreciated by her kids. At the tables, she was numb and excited all at once, and her anxieties grew so faint she couldn't hear them anymore. The high of winning was so immediate. The pain of losing passed so fast. You want to be a big shot, her mother told her when Bachman called to borrow more money. You keep gambling because you want the attention.
That wasn't it, though.
I just wanted to feel good at something, she said to me. This was the only thing I'd ever done where it seemed like I had a skill.
By the summer of 2001, Bachman's debts to Harrah's hit $20,000. She had been keeping the losses secret from her husband. But when her mother finally cut off the stipends, she broke down and confessed. They hired a bankruptcy attorney, cut up her credit cards, and sat at the kitchen table to write out a plan for a more austere, responsible life. She took her dresses to a used clothing store and withstood the humiliation of a 19-year-old turning down almost all of them because she said they were out of style. Eventually, it started to feel like the worst was over. Finally, she thought, the compulsion was gone. But of course, it wasn't even close to the end. Years later, after she had lost everything and had ruined her life and her husband's, after she had thrown away hundreds of thousands of dollars and her lawyer had argued before the state's highest court that Angie Bachman gambled not by choice, but out of habit, and thus shouldn't bear culpability for her losses, after she had become an object of scorn on the internet, where people compared her to Jeffrey Dahmer and parents who abused their kids, she would wonder, how much responsibility do I actually bear? I honestly believe anyone in my shoes would have done the same things, Bachman told me.